This is a show about facing fear, unlocking courage, and taking action.
Courage isn't necessarily a daunting thing.
It's going to give you more purpose. It's going to give you more drive.
It feels like making a courageous decision is going to get you closer to who you aspire to be.
It's knowledge plus faith plus action equals courage.
I really do believe that where I am now, what I'm doing now, has got a lot more purpose to it than building the next brand or getting some, you know, some awards to put on my shelf. That's been there, done that. I'm okay with that. I don't have anything else to prove in that regard.
Years at FedEx alone, 30 years in the business. I'm not trying to make you feel old, Steve. What a terrible way to start. By the way, thank God we're friends. Jeez. I mean, where I was trying to get to is now you have your 3.5 years into, I think, what you call your second act, which I'm now, obviously, my next question is like, how many acts in a play? Three, right? So, but we'll stay in the second act here. Your 3.5 years as president and chief executive officer at the American Advertising Federation. And you've been like a lifer. And I know you've loved the business like I love the business. First of all, how's it going? I mean, in 3.5 years in, do you feel like it's what you thought it would be?
Well, first of all, I'm not that old, Ryan. I started pretty young. You know, it's come. Give me a break there.
Steve is 35 years old.
I knew what I wanted to be when I was a little kid. And it's going really, really, really well. I told somebody the other day, a dear friend, I've never worked as hard as in my life, but I've never been as fulfilled in my life. And I feel like I've got a real purpose. And I feel like, you know, I call it my passion project, but my second act is one that's going to be a legacy builder for me personally, and something that allows me to take that whole, you know, triple decades of learning in the business world and put it to work for, you know, good and not evil, and to make sure that young kids getting into advertising have it easier than I had, because I had to fight and scratch and claw to get a shot. And, you know, a kid growing up in Memphis didn't have a lot of chances to make it in the big leagues. But I knew what I wanted to do, and I just had to figure out a way to get there. My brief intermission helped me lock down on what I wanted to do for my second act, and that's to make all the on-ramps even smoother for young people to get a job and a career in what I think is the greatest business on the planet.
Well, I mean, first of all, for those of you who are, you know, on an elliptical or walking or in the car and don't have time to go Google Steve Pacheco, I think you've done more than just scrap and claw your way in the business. I mean, you're recognized, you know, by the Advertising Club of New York as the Advertising Person of the Year last decade. You know, you've done 12 Super Bowl commercials. I mean, I feel like I've scrapped and clawed, and I don't feel like I did jack in the business. And I don't know if that's like, maybe that's sort of part of the makeup of a creative person, that you never feel like you've done enough or you never feel like you've pushed enough. But I deeply care about this business. I know you deeply care about this business. And I was actually trying to think, Steve, when did we actually meet? I know why we met. I just don't know what year it was. When did we actually launch AdMerica?
It was spring of 2012. I did a site visit to the Hilton Hotel right there on the bay in San Diego, because we were going to bring in AAF's national conference the following summer. And that was my year as board chair. You get sworn in June, and you get a year to run the board of directors. And so we had taken a site visit, and I kept thinking, you know, if ever we were going to make a real switch and take our national conference to another level and brand it and have some recognition around it, maybe now would be a good time to do it. And, you know, I just wasn't going to leave well enough alone. So I remember walking and talking to some San Diego creative people, and I said, I want you to introduce me to the most creative guy in San Diego, or gal, because I need to throw a project at them, see if they want to do anything with this. And back then it was the San Diego Interactive Group or whatever they called it. And,
yeah.
And you were the top guy there, and somebody made our introduction. And I said, would you have any interest in rebranding this thing or taking a critical look at it? And I think in 2 weeks later, you sent me some stuff, and AdMerica was born out of that and launched in June of 2013. We're coming up on 10 years, man.
Wow. Well, first of all, clearly I was the only creative person in San Diego if I got the gig. second, Man, I remember how afraid I was. You talk about fear and courage and sort of also acknowledging who I was. And I would call it probably my second act. I think act one was New York City.
Yeah.
Act two was like a huge chip on my shoulder coming out of my New York City experience in San Diego. And, you know, all I had heard was like, there's a lawyer running the thing. And then you also have to meet the guy from FedEx. And I'm like, wait, FedEx? And this is, I'll admit this, Steve, as much I was excited and scared because I'm like, they're not going to want to change this thing, but let's try. Let's at least try. The fact that this is the part where I'm going to get myself in trouble. Here's a more positive way to say this. I'm very happy that a lawyer is not running the American Advertising Federation now. It's all good, you know, but like you live and breathe and understand both sides of the brain here. You understand the people, you understand the emotion, you've done that work. And it wasn't like I had any, like, I didn't have a bad experience with the past regime, but like, I feel like you are the perfect person to be at the helm here. Do you feel that way?
Well, there's a great line that says the past is prologue and everything that you go through is supposed to either prepare you for greatness or what's to come next, or, you know, learn a lesson from. And I've learned a lot of lessons, Ryan, you know, some good, some not so good. And first of all, healthy respect for lawyers. I'm not going to bash lawyers. I am the first non-attorney that's ever led this organization at the national level. And that was a huge risk for the people that got to decide on who was going to do this job. And I had to convince them that, A, I had enough experience where I wasn't going to put anybody at risk or in trouble. And so far, so good. But also that maybe, just as you said, maybe having an attorney run a national trade organization for advertising is not the very best idea in some cases. And maybe you need a true ad person who really wants to advocate for advertising. And more importantly, I think, understands how things can go sideways. You know, and I've seen a lot of things go sideways and found a way to self-correct and bring it back online without ruffling too many feathers or going to court or anything like that. So I have a healthy respect for the rule of law, and I will always abide by it. Nothing we're going to do is going to put us in harm's way. I assure you of that. And if we're really advocates for advertising, we've got to walk the walk and talk the talk and connect with people on a really human level that says, I've been where you are. I understand the struggles and the challenges, and I'm here to help.
Yeah, I'm sure that the organization has evolved over the 118 years it's been around, right? Founded in 1905. I'm slightly flabbergasted that it's only been run by legal. And to say, you know, just to kind of backtrack a little bit, my dad's a lawyer, my brother's a lawyer, my brother's wife's a lawyer, my uncle's a lawyer. I mean, I'm well protected. I'm a well protected guy, thankfully, and I'm the black sheep of the family. And so maybe you could sort of take us back to, for those who don't know, kind of give the log line on the American Advertising Federation. I know it's been around since 1905. And if I remember correctly, I mean, you're based in D.C. Maybe that's because it was sort of about lobbying at first before kind of expanding its role. Can you sort of share your definition or the deal on the AAF?
Sure. And you know, the elevator pitch, Ryan, is that we are here to promote and protect the profession of advertising. That's your bumper sticker t-shirt slogan. And that can mean a variety of things, obviously. My better take at that is that we are the unifying voice for advertising. And because of our grassroots network, which is the craziest mashup of people in the advertising business that you'll ever come across, we've got anywhere from 35 to 40,000 dues-paying professional members in one of 160 ad clubs from coast to coast. And those people are doing all types of work to advance the profession of advertising. Some of them are agencies and clients. Some of them are producers and content creators. Some of them are agencies and brands. It's all over the place. I mean, we have the same theme that they do at the Hard Rock Cafe, and that's love all and serve all. We'll take anybody who's interested in advancing the agenda for advertising and making it a destination of choice for young people and wants to see it do well into our membership. And that reaches all the way down to the collegiate level, which is how I first got involved. We have about 140 campuses in North America, 5 to 6,000 college members that are paying us dues who want to use that as a resume builder and to get their foot in the door for their first job or their first, you know, two jobs. As a kid at Memphis State University, I was a pretty undisciplined student. And, you know, my counselor back then said, hey, you need to do this national student ad competition. And I'm going to sign you up and you're going to lead this team and you are going to develop a campaign for a real product and a real budget. And you get to present to real ad pros. And it might be a good thing for you to just add some discipline to your book and all that. And reluctantly, I did it. And we did pretty well. And we wound up second place in our district, which was a pretty tough competition. And I was hooked, man. It was like, this is great exposure to the people that I want to be in front of.
What was the client?
The client, this is 1984, and the client was Maxwell House Coffee.
Wow.
Who, you know, you're an old ad nerd like me. It's
totally
good to the last drop. Was
the very last drop, yeah.
And so for us, it was like, you know, do better than that. And if you flash back to 1984, a big thing happening then was magicians and big stage magicians and illusionists and David Copperfield and all that stuff. So we were going to do on, and the brief was to get young people in at college to start drinking coffee earlier. And obviously this is pre-Starbucks and everything else. So we came up with using magic themed events. And our tagline was Magic Mornings Begin with Maxwell House, which wow. I think is still pretty solid. and then we were going to book all these magicians to go off and do, you know, stage acts and shows and sample coffee and things like that. So,
all right. So,
second place.
Here's the first of all, I don't think I knew that you were in the competition. And that means you probably don't know that I was in the competition.
I thought that you were. Right. Yeah.
So, I went, my junior year, we had Pizza Hut as
okay
the sponsor, and God, so this is 1997, and just then innovation in pizza was just starting to take off, meaning we're gonna make a pizza square versus, you know, around. The big one for us also was that they were just diversifying their pizzas outside of just cheese sauce and dough, and we had like, they were like, explore the white pizza and other types of pizzas. So look, we ended up doing like, I can't even tell you what the line was, which tells you how we did it place-wise. But I remember we went this whole movie theme. We had the Aspen family for the white pizza. We had Boise in the Hood for the Boise potato pizza. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Hooked into advertising. Clearly, we didn't get out of the district. Now, the other story I will share, I thought I was done with NSAC and advertising. Senior year, big man on campus, just want to like take a couple credits, get to New York City. And one of my good friends at Ithaca College, which is where I went, the first day of ad club or NSAC, she's like, you need to get in here. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, the guy that's running our group is crazy. He's like, some of you will fail. This is a true story, Steve. I'm like, what? I mean, we're college kids, right? What do you mean? A student said this, you know, it's a student run organization. So he said, some of you will feel you need to get in here now. So I'm like, okay, who's this guy? It's Jason DeLand. Jason DeLand is one of the founders of Anomaly.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I zip over. Jason, this is, by the way, I'll never forget. We were at the top of Wegmans, Jason and I meeting for the first time, and we hit it off. And we're yin and yang because we're just done. I love Jason to tears. We're both really competitive shock. But that became our friendship. We didn't know each other until senior year. And obviously Jason and Anomaly, those guys are rocket ships over there.
You know, it's such a great program. The National Student Ad Competition has been around now for 45 years. Every year we add a new wrinkle to it and try to do something different with it. But the core assignment remains. It's a real life competition. We call it our March Madness. And I don't think that's a big stretch because all these schools compete. The level playing field is there. You don't get to wave your campus flag. You are a team number, so you're anonymous. And the real life judges get to see it just for what it is, which is who's the best kid and how they prepared for this best. So for me, it was just a great learning opportunity, not only group work, which also comes in college and you learn as a team player that you've either got to pull your weight or more than your own weight, as you know, but also just the relationships that you made. I said we came in second place in the Southeast, which was our district. The team that kicked our ass was University of Georgia. And the team leader, my counterpart there, was a gentleman by the name of David Raines, who went on to run global brand management at Coca-Cola in Atlanta. And we still talk to this day. You know, 40 years later, we're still talking to each other and still maintaining that friendship. And we were competitors there for a weekend, but we got past that. And he went on to a pretty good career at Coke, and I went on to a really great career at FedEx. And that's just two of the winners that came out of that group back in 1984. It's a fascinating arc, if you will.
Yeah, it's a pretty intense competition because you also gave, well, at least we gave our semester to getting ready for these competitions. And so you're right. It is a rite of passage. Anyone that's listening that's a professor or in college, like, even thank you. Or yeah, it's like roll up your sleeves and get ready, because it is really what the real world is like. You're starting an agency from scratch. Now let's talk about the professional ranks for a minute, because there's an unspoken professional competition called the Super Bowl, right? And the Super Bowl is still the Super Bowl. And I'm curious for you, I mean, you've done 12 of these Super Bowl commercials, by the way. That's ridiculous. Back at FedEx, do you have a personal favorite of the 12 that you did?
It's like asking me if I have a favorite kid. You know, it's I probably do have a favorite. And just to reset, you know, 12 consecutive years of Super Bowl advertising for one brand, I haven't really investigated, but I don't know that there's another person walking the planet that can say that they've done that, you know, 12 straight years for one brand. And I take a lot of pride in that, because it's high stakes, but you also learn every time you do one. So you try to better yourself. And so, you know, my favorite should be the last one I did, because you would think I would roll everything I learned into that, but that's not necessarily the case. But we did a spot in it's called Stick. A lot of people refer to it as caveman, and it's no real spoken dialogue. It's gibberish, because it's caveman talk. And it's the ultimate payback for my motto for making advertising has been tell a great story and make people listen. And simple stories well told is how I like to break that down. And I believe at the end of the day, you know, great advertising tells a story and builds up power and perception of a brand, and I'm a big brand guy, as you well know. So caveman let us tell a story about, you know, a guy who chose not to use FedEx, and he failed, and then he got fired and stomped, and it did work out well. And so that's my favorite for three reasons. Number one is that it was a great story and we told it without language. Number two is that we had probably the best team in the world on that creatively and production wise, and it was just a perfect storm of the right people coming together, and we got everybody pulling on the same end of the rope. And the third piece is that it was the most awarded commercial I ever worked on. It won a Lion, but it also won an Emmy Award, Primetime Emmy Award that year for best ad. And you got to remember, you know, FedEx was punching way above their weight. The Budweisers of the world and the Visas of the world and the people that run multiple spots in the Super Bowl, you know, ganged up on us. And yet at the end of it all, we took home an Emmy for that too, which is pretty good recognition, I think.
What do you think? I mean, I'm always fascinated by the relationship between brand and agency, and for being such a creative business, if you really deconstruct it all, and you need that undeniably, but like, you don't get to pass go to that without trust. You just can't get there without like a calmness and a trust, I think, with a partner. So like, talk to me about like, if there were ingredients that went into letting them come up with their best work, giving them permission to do that, and the safety net that you created, frankly, for them to come up and push, versus you having a bar of what's talented as well, creatively. Tell me a little bit about that relationship, what it took.
Yeah, it's twofold, Ryan, because, you know, part of it is your gut level instinct and what you've built up over the years and just what feels right to you and what you know you can pull off. And that's on you. The partnership itself has to be strong. And BBDO was FedEx's ad agency going back to 1989. It's still historically one of the longest tenured successful relationships between an agency and a client. And when I inherited the relationship, I set out to make it even better. And you know, here's a kid from Memphis, Tennessee, showing up on 6th Avenue and trying to tell them, you know, here's how it's going to be now. And they're like, yeah, okay, we're going to keep doing our thing. But we came to a really, really great place. And I think pretty early on, they realized that I knew what I was doing, that I had a vision, and that I could help sell stuff back in Memphis that maybe in some cases they hadn't been able to do with my passion and with my support and with my credibility. And so we took off and ran for it, and we really, you know, swung for the fences, and we were very courageous in many ways. but it also put us in some tough spots from time to time, and we had to fight for it. So some of that came to a head when days weren't so good and people were looking to make changes. And I will never, ever forget that John Osborne, who was leading the account at that point, John and I holed up in a hotel for about 2 days and hammered out this thing called the Partnership Promise. And I know that sounds corny, but it was all the commitments that the agency would make and all the commitments that the client would make. And we signed off on it and then took it to our respective corners and had everybody else sign off on it. And from that point forward, that became our Magna Carta that said, here's the rules and here's how we're going to play. And we're not going to have petty fights or all this drama. We're just going to respect each other's positions and do great work that really moves the needle and makes stuff happen.
So your role today is very different than what it was, right? So I guess I have to ask, first of all, deep, deep down in the soul of Steve Pacheco, is there still that little voice that's like, I want to go do another Super Bowl spot?
Well, I'll answer honestly, Ryan, because to my recollection, I've never lied to you. I see stuff on air now that I just can't abide by, and it troubles me greatly. And I'm like, I wish they'd called me. I could have helped them get out of this jam. This is maybe the worst stuff I've ever seen. And you know, I'm in a different demo now. I admit that, but I also know what I know. And I got to tell you, most of what I see out there these days is not particularly good or well crafted. And a lot of that's for a lot of reasons. And I just know that I could jump back in. I still got a lot of gas in the tank. I still got a lot of tread on the tires. I still think I could help people. But I really do believe that where I am now, what I'm doing now, has got a lot more purpose to it than building the next brand or getting some, you know, some awards to put on my shelf. That's been there, done that. I'm okay with that. I don't have anything else to prove in that regard. I just want to be able to help young people again that are coming up through the ranks to get a good start and not make mistakes.
So I kind of don't want to let you shake off this idea of like, well, what is it? Like, where's the, cause I agree with you. And I don't think this is like, maybe it is, maybe this is the same conversation as like how our parents thought about music when like, oh, kids, you guys don't know what music is. Like this James Brown is music. Elvis is music. What is that that you're listening to? So maybe it is the same conversation. Maybe it isn't, but I will also fully acknowledge when I see the work today, it feels rushed. It feels like it's missing something. Why is that happening in your opinion?
Well, it's just one man's opinion, but I believe, look, I have a linear spectrum and it goes all the way from far left, which says, I don't care. Couldn't give a shit. Doesn't matter. Complete apathy, right? That's, okay, that's at the zero base. And then take that all the way out to the right and 10. And, you know, in my days as a brand marketer, I was pegging at 14 and 15. I cared so much and so deeply. And I put so much of my personal brand and my personal, you know, just everything that was in me had to come out in my work. It's the proof of an artist, right? You sign your name on the bottom right-hand corner. And I really did. I might have cared too much is what I like to say.
Yeah.
And I'm not taking any exception with that, but I was literally off the scale about how much I cared. And so as part of that, I had to make everything that I did the absolute best that it could be. And I did a notebook on every commercial I ever did. This, I just grabbed one off the shelf and it says Super Bowl 2006. And it literally has everything from the storyboards to visual representations to notes from meetings to my own personal thoughts to a couple of poems and just all the things that I needed to do to make that spot the absolute best that it could be. And so that's just the way that I attacked the problem. I wanted to know everything that there was to know about it. And if any question came up in any of those rooms, I would have the answer either in my book or in my head. And I don't think anybody's doing that these days. I'm not sure. There are notebooks on commercials. Everything seems rushed and hurried and not very well crafted. And I really do believe that the viewer, you know, gets permission to just ignore that if they don't want to, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're really talking about is the prep work and the hours and the chiseling away. I mean, go back to caveman days and like we're hitting a rock and hitting a rock and hitting a rock and hitting a rock until you finally have something you could turn into a wheel, right? All right. this is an unfair question, but I'm still curious to get your take. And it's unfair because there's not a particular brand and you can't work backwards from it. But let's just say that I was like, hey, Steve, you get to do a Super Bowl commercial this 2023. We're in fourth quarter here. And come February, your spot's going to run. Now, again, this is the unfair part because we don't know who it's for. But, like, let's just talk about the note, right? What is the tone and the note that you – if you could hit any note, therefore, we could back in the brand on what America really needs. And it's going to come off and just crush it. You know, you got 150 million people watching on the day. America's ready to sponge it in. What's the note that you want to hit?
Dear listener, we didn't prep for this, and I didn't know this question was coming. That's important for you to understand. But I will answer from the heart. And it's what do we do with all this resilience, and where do we take it? And I want it to be aspirational and sort of, you know, if you got through that, you can get through anything. And just take what you've learned and gotten better at and put it to work and make the best version of you and yourself and your community going forward. That's my answer.
Okay, cool. And does that come off heartfelt? Do you use humor as a vessel? What do you think?
I you got to go right for the heartstrings on something like that and just really make it real and make it raw and make it, you know, emotive and find a way to connect it on a level. Which, by the way, is not easy for 150 million people to all get on the same page. But I think if you do it well, and if you do it with good intent, and you seem really, really authentic, you might be able to do something good there.
You know, a year ago, we had a lot of notes. There's a lot of humor as well. I can't not bring this up, right? I mean, Larry David was all over the place saying, don't be like Larry, right? And maybe Larry kind of knew something here, right? No?
Maybe so. And, you know, I live tweet the Super Bowl every year. I am the guy you do not want to come to your Super Bowl party because I'm going to tell everybody to shut up and I'm paying attention. And, you know, maybe I need to be in a separate room. But every year it's harder for me to find good stuff there. And I just speak from the heart. Truth to power is a wonderful thing. And I'm in a position now where I can just speak my piece and say that didn't hit the mark at all. Or, you know, careful, your strategy is showing or that seemed rushed or whatever the critique is. And I think, you know, I love being able to speak my mind on that.
All right. So let's just say that 50% of this audience is not a marketing audience that's listening to this show. Because when I hear careful, your strategy is showing.
Yeah.
That is such a powerful idea. Can you sort of unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. And again, for the listeners who are not as deeply immersed in this business as Ryan and I and a few others are, which, you know, again, at 8 years old, I was sitting at the kitchen table with the Sunday newspaper and I would mark up the ads in it and try to make them better. That's how deep my addiction goes. And and my mother and father would scratch their heads and say, what are we going to do with this kid? He's up to it again. You know, so I knew early on what I wanted to do and I've made it my life's practice and try to get better and better and better at it. And so just as LeBron James gets better at his game every year, I try to add a new wrinkle and figure out what I can do to make it better. So your strategy is showing means that you took whatever creative brief that came your way and they told you to make this about something and mandatories include this and that, and you got to do this and it has to say this. And then they literally just spit that back out into some type of a concept that gets executed. And so if you really look with a learned eye at a spot that's on the Super Bowl, chances are you can tell, or you can back your way into the brief and say, I bet they told them to do that. And that's exactly what they did, but they didn't add any nuance or higher concept to it. And it's a really lazy way to produce advertising. And it's not fair to the client. Quick point of reference, I've always believed that a client gets the advertising they deserve. And if the client's not watching over that or demanding for better stuff, then so be it. That's what they're going to get.
Yeah, I always try to describe it like, imagine it's a really sunny day. And you're walking along and you have a shadow. And the point of where you and your shadow meet is the only place strategy should connect. Yeah. And the rest is sky is the limit, right? On like how much magic can you make? But to your point, like if you hit it right on the head on, and it's like, well, that's the strategy. They just gave us the strategy. They didn't push. They didn't make me feel. It feels like advertising, not made me laugh or entertainment or whatever. I completely agree with you.
Here's a clean example. Last year in the Super Bowl, Sam's Club wanted to talk about all the different cool things you can do with their Sam's Club membership. And they hired Kevin Hart and his entourage to invade a Sam's Club and dig out this little private club area of Sam's Club and all the cool, you know, benefits you get as being a Sam's Club member. Well, it didn't hit home. Sam's Club is now looking for a new ad agency. Kevin Hart will always be in commercials because he's Kevin Hart. And it just showed the strategy came through. It was like, okay, Kevin Hart appears in clubs. He's in a club at Sam's Club. I get it. But it wasn't particularly good or moving or motivating or anything else. It just felt dead, flat.
So I like to always say that courage is a journey word. It's not really something you land on. It's sort of in the messy middle, right? On the way to some destination. And the destination, if you're doing it right, is probably chasing relevance. It might be doing something truly meaningful, like the work you're doing right now. Or it might also be like just taking on change. And, you know, like there's a lot of change happening in business right now. And if you're not changing, you know, you're probably going in the wrong way. And the advertising business as a whole, as we've sort of alluded to today, there's a lot of change. When you think about the role that you have, because the heyday of, and again, I don't want to come off as dating myself, right? But like, yeah, the game has changed. It's not just like magic stories living in magical places. There's a lot of test and learn. You do 17 pieces of content and the one that stands out is the one that you just invest in. Where do you put your time and energy and what changes are you seeing and how do we address those changes?
Well, it's, you know, this is one of the most human powered businesses I've ever been exposed to is advertising. And, you know, machines can do a lot of things, but they're never going to take over the power of the concept and the idea. And, you know, I think back, Ryan, we lost a lot of ad legends this year. Dan Wyden comes to mind and, you know, what he meant to the world of advertising. And Dan had this brilliant mind and, you know, just this complete conviction of his courage to make the world great and to make a dent in the world and all that stuff. And, you know, Nike alone is enough to put him in our AAF Advertising Hall of Fame, which he is in, along with Kennedy. And so no machine's ever going to replace that. It has to be humans who really care about each other, who want to leave the world a better place, who want to put their mark on it. At the end of it all, it's our artistry of one kind or another, but it's also about connecting passions and talent with purpose and meaning. And, you know, I don't think that's ever going to go out of style. I think if you get the right assignment and you put it in the hands of a capable person and they add that level of humanity, I think you're off to a really great head start in this world. And so my position now allows me to tell the good news stories about why advertising is a great place to embark on a career. Heaven knows there's enough bad news stories out there about advertising, and I'm never going to be able to squelch all those, but I would like to have a counterpoint and be able to tell some of the good news stories about this business and what it's created for young people. We still got a lot of work to do in the diversity and equity and inclusion area and belonging area, but we're making some good strides in that. We are doing a lot of the heavy lifting and hard work just to make entry into your first job in advertising easier to get into. It's not always been that way. And you know, at the end of the day, it's humans treating other humans with kindness and respect and dignity and having that circle of people that know that you're not just in this alone, you're in this with a community of people that want to see you succeed and do well.
I'm going to sound like a curmudgeon now, but that's not what I like had the luxury of. I mean, I moved to New York City and it was, you know, New York City, I always say it's like a treadmill on 10.0 and it doesn't slow down for anybody. And you felt the competition. You felt it right away. It's like, it makes me excited to like hear back then you could get away with being an asshole if you were talented.
Yeah.
And like those days are over. Like no one has time for that shit anymore. Like you have to be liked. You have to be a good listener. Yes. You have to be talented still.
Yes.
But I'm curious in your mind, do you feel like we have a talent issue? Like, do you feel like, I felt like for a period of time and the longer I actually stay in Land of Courage, the further away I get from agency. And I do like a lot of the questions I ask you, like I do miss the addiction part of coming up with a wildly courageous idea. I really do. But I worry, like, our talent, are they going to tech? Are they going to brands? I guess in some ways, if they're going to brands, I mean, lots of brands are building their own in-house agencies, and maybe that's a fix. But what are you seeing from your lens?
Well, and the American Advertising Federation has not conducted formal research on this, but our anecdotal feedback from our 60 corporate members, and I talk to them every week, is twofold. One is that we don't have a talent issue. We have a talent connectivity issue. The talent is out there, and it's all across the country. And one of the silver linings of the pandemic and the lockdown is that you're able to now access great talent that might be hiding out in some little corner of the place that you've never thought about looking. And it doesn't, you know, the power bases are no longer LA and New York and Chicago, and you don't have to fly in your fancy pants creative director from one of those three markets. You might find a kid who's in Asheville, North Carolina, who is setting it on fire and you know, just needs a bigger outlet and a larger canvas. And so that's the good news, is the talent is always out there, and we're growing more talent each day. And a lot of that is representative of their backgrounds and their journeys. And I get excited about that. We just had our Hall of Achievement in New York last week, and that's 8 people under the age of 40 who are killing it in advertising. But you know what, Ryan, they're also really good and decent human beings who are taking a share of the time that they're given on this earth and giving back to their communities and making sure that people are treated with dignity and respect, and that they're at a very human level. They're just being good people. And so we forget that we're all citizens of the same world, and we've got to be good citizens. We don't want to wind up on the other end of that spectrum about not caring enough. And that, to me, is the real difference maker. I mean, talent alone might get you into the game, but it's not going to keep you in the game. And so you've got to carry yourself in such a way that people want to work with you, and people want to see, you know, how you came to be made like that, and why you're wired that way, and how that's helped. And, you know, I didn't make a lot of enemies in my double decades at a brand that's pretty important around the world. I tried to always make friends along the way. And the folks at BBDO will tell you, I treated them as if we were going to be lifelong friends and we were always going to work together. It was not just a transactional thing about go make me that ad and move on. It was really deeper than that. And I've still got great friendships that I carried over from that through the years. It's look, we're working on this together, and we're going to put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and let's make it the best we can be. But when it's all said and done, we're also going to go out and have a beer and talk about it probably. You know, it's not just going to be transactional. And so I really do believe that the courageous aspect of it is, you know, being vulnerable enough to let people do their best work and to know that you'll support them and their work as best you can.
Yeah, those who are listening from the business, who've kind of gone through the business, you also know that your role changes. Like, the older you get, the more you're a detective looking for talent, right? So I loved what you said, like, scrape. We never had access to more places to find, right, talented people. It's staying curious about where might those people come from. And I think when you're younger and you're just getting started, it is still the joy of being a detective, by the way, but it's like, you're like a sleuth detective looking for the insight, looking for the idea. Then you, once you have the idea, like, how does it come to life? What's the vessel you choose to use? These are all the things I get excited about talking about this stuff, because you can't not. Like, I still love it. It's still in my blood, you know, the concept of coming up with great ideas. This is a good lead into, by the way. So I did see what you launched last week. Congratulations. I think you launched this at the Hall of Achievements. 30 years of the Hall of Achievements, by the way, that's an achievement in itself. But you and iHeart are coming together, and you're launching a podcast called Future Legends of Advertising. Is that, or did it already launch?
It launched last Monday, and we're so excited about it. It's been a dream of ours for a while. And like any good thing, it took a while to come together and make it work. And so what we've done is we've partnered up our Hall of Achievement, which is under 40 years old, people that are doing great work. And it's important to note, Ryan, that it's not a 40 under 40. It's typically 6 to 8 individuals representing a real diverse background of people that make up advertising, media, and marketing industries. And so we pair them with a living legend of advertising who's in our AAF Advertising Hall of Fame, which has been around for 71 years, and which includes all the greats that if you scan that list, you're just literally blown away by the who's who of the Wydens and the Kennedys and everybody else who's come through there. And so for us, it seemed like a really good opportunity to throw the flag. And at 30 years of being Hall of Achievement, in and out and through those years, just to match up someone who's at their mid-career level with somebody who has, you know, spent at least 40 years in the business and is a living legend, and just have them talk about topics that are important to them, talk about their journey to date and all the way up to being in the Hall of Fame, and share the stories of their purpose, why they got into this business, how this business has been meaningful to them, and, you know, maybe an anecdote or two about some fun stories along the way. And we just open up the mic and throw down the gauntlet and they just start talking, and it's really a lot of fun. And iHeart is promoting it through their channel, and we're promoting it through AAF.org, and it's off to a really solid start. And we've got some unlikely pairings in there. We've got some that make some really good sense, but it's great conversation with advertising at the center of it from the perspective of someone under 40 and someone who's probably over 60.
Yeah, I saw, I think, Bozema St. John's in there, and she's such a badass. She really is. Like, I heard her speak up in Canada. I was like, yeah, I can listen to this woman talk all day. I think she's a daughter of a preacher, by the way. I'm thinking,
I believe so.
But is there a construct? Like, is there like, hey, you get three questions, I get three questions. Like, who kicks it off?
I'd like to say it's a structure, but, and we've got a template and an outline, but we go wherever they take us. And, you know, sometimes they want to riff a little bit more on one of the topics than the others. We always ask about their journey and how they came to be where they are now. And then, you know, we always look ahead and ask them where they see things headed. And remember, sometimes we're marrying up someone who's from ad tech and someone who ran, you know, a great agency network. So the pairings are really meant to be purposely leaning the conversation towards how do these two intersections ever connect, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like in a rational world these two would ever come together. And that's part of the goodness of advertising, is that you're going to work with some of the most creative people in the world, some of the most intellectually curiosity driven people in the world, and let's honestly say some of the most courageous people in the world who want to stand up for what they mean and put some power behind it.
All right. So AdMerica is going to San Antonio in 2023. No, not 2023.
St. Louis. Yeah.
There we go, man. I don't have a whole notebook on AdMerica for 23. It's going to St. Louis. So tell me, why St. Louis? Is there a theme, or do you just keep it at AdMerica now?
Yeah, you know, we had to lock it down for 2 years during COVID. We couldn't have a national conference. We just couldn't make it happen. So it gave us the opportunity to really re-engineer the national conference. And for a while, we got guilty of being in high-end resorts and far-flung places and, you know, places that were a little bit hard to get to or more expensive. And so realizing the current day demands on everybody, we settled on three criteria. One is that it would be easily affordable, and, you know, no five-star resorts anymore, because I think people are tired of that and been there, done that. We're not trying to compete with Cannes or anything else. Second thing is that it has to be within a three-hour drive of some of our, the big percentage of our members. So we want it to be easily accessible. And then the third one is that we needed uniquely American cities. We're the American Advertising Federation, and it occurs to us that instead of just being in the power bases of America, why don't we go to these places that, you know, are uniquely America? And so last year, coming out of the pandemic, it was Nashville. This year, it'll be St. Louis. And I'm proud to say in 2024, we're going to come out west and be a little closer to you. And the goal is to work our way across the country and then reset and go back and start all over. So we'll always do one on the eastern region, one in the central, and one in the western. And we're going to keep that cadence going and build up our audience.
We're a bit full circle here, because we talked about the National Student Advertising Competition that culminates at AdMerica. I imagine that's still the case for this year. And Steve, I got to tell you, like, this is not a shameless plug just because I love you. I really believe this. Like, I absolutely love judging the National Student Advertising Competition. I always learn something first from the case study. My biggest fear, it's a show about courage and can't do that without fear, is like, I'm a dinosaur. I'm missing the latest thing. And so I remember reading up about, like, okay, the newest platform, or like even the Maxwell House, you know, making, how do we get that to be basically, how do we get college kids to drink coffee? That's what I heard.
Yeah. Right?
So you're constantly learning something new. But then the kids themselves, as someone that had an agency, I would just pluck like the three all-stars from California and see them before anyone else had a chance to see them. I don't understand why more agencies don't do this.
Well, and you know, part of it's an exposure problem, Ryan. We're trying to open that up a little bit more. And now that we're back in live conferences, I think it'll happen a little more naturally and organically. But we give a Best Presenter Award that's unanimously chosen by the judges. And judges are typically client side. In my tenure, we had Tinder as the connection app. That was the client for an SAC, and the kids loved it. They actually, you know, did some pretty courageous things there. The faculty were a little bit more skeptical, and we had to teach them a lot about what Tinder does and doesn't do. But the kids learned a lot, and there were some great presentations. And you talk about courage. A lot of these kids got up there and really spoke their mind because Tinder asked them to be honest about their opinions of what the app meant. That was followed by Quest 2 from Meta and Oculus. It was, you know, the VR, AR gaming headset, and the kids had a great time with that. And that's a unique presenting experience because part of it's virtual, part of it's reality. And there were some kids that really shone above there. For this coming year in St. Louis, it's Indeed, the jobs board that, you know, has all these career building tools. And I think that's really timely because a lot of kids are really looking to extend their career and to get their first job. And Indeed's made up of a lot of really world-class marketers down there in Texas, and they're having fun with it. They just started briefing the students. And so by the time we get to June and see the final eight teams present, any one of those kids could probably walk into an entry-level job and just kill it from that point on.
Well, Steve, I'm so like excited to like hear all the things that you're doing. Happy to like, if I could ever be of service, it sounds like you guys are coming west for AdMerica. I'm going to be like, hey, it's time to rebrand. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to suggest a rebrand.
Your work is only good for 10 years. Is that what you're telling me?
Hey, that's not bad with the average. No, keep doing what you're doing. My one takeaway from today, and I'm there's a lot of takeaways, but in the spirit of kind of latching on to the one thing you said that was probably most important was simple stories well told. You know, I don't think you can muck that up when the line is simple stories well told. It's, you know, how do you distill it down to the most essential clear story? And yeah, make sure there's enough strategy in there, but not the whole strategy is being shown. I appreciate you giving me some of your time. Maybe I lied. One last question. What do you think is, as you look through the next 3.5 years on the job, what do you think is the most courageous thing you'll have to address from the seat?
Well, before I answer that, Ryan, I want to thank you for the time today. You know, it's I think you're in season two. You're approaching 100 episodes. You know, this started out as a germ of an idea like all these things do. But I'm really proud of how you've been able to build on it. And just the variety and the spectrum of the guests that you bring on, I think, is pretty amazing. And I scroll the episode list and I'm like, I'll see that one later. I want to watch that one later. A lot of good stuff there, and I think you're to be complimented on that. And just, you know, keep up the good work and get this exposure to people who need it and keep doing the good thing. I think it's really a powerful platform, and you're just such a natural on it that I think people really enjoy connecting with you on that.
I appreciate it. By the way, keep me honest, too. I know you will. Like, if you see, like, Ryan, don't do an episode on crypto, please, or I don't know what it is.
You went down some cereal rabbit hole. You had a lot of cereal stuff there for a while. I did notice that. But who doesn't love cereal, right? And I'm kidding. Okay, I'm kidding. The most courageous thing that I will do in my next, you know, my next 3 to 5 years will probably be, you know, I have to tread lightly. A lot of our corporate partners are experiencing, you know, change and chaos right now, and I have to be fair-minded, and I got to sleep at night. So my courageous side of things will be to speak my mind on behalf of the industry without being personal or attacking anybody. But you know, I'm an ethical enough person to know that I've got to be able to speak clearly, and to speak truth to power is a very important thing to me. And so I think in the months ahead, and certainly in the years ahead, we'll be called upon to take a stand on things that are affecting our industry you know, with some people that might not have the best intentions. And we got to call that out and throw the flag and really investigate that, because we are the unifying voice for advertising. We're not here to split people up or to put them in one camp or two. We really need to come together. I just had a board meeting and I opened it up by saying, when you're in this room and helping do things for the AAF and the good of the industry, put all of your egos aside and put your day job aside and just think how you can roll up your sleeves and make the industry better. And the people that are in that room have committed to that. They want to do that for the industry. And that gives me a lot of, you know, a lot of power to work with. And if people really genuinely want to commit themselves to making the industry better, those are my kind of people, and I can make that happen. Those that aren't going to be part of that, we'll have to say, see you down the road somewhere. I think that,
yeah, and boards are,
it
always
takes a lot of courage, I think.
It does. And boards are tough. And America is, you know, we're not so united right now on much. So I can only imagine.
But I want to be clear. Like, I've got an incredible board. The people that are on my board support the AAF in various ways, some more than others. Tiffany R. Warren is my current board chair. Following her is going to be Helen Lynn from Publicis Media. That represents the fifth and sixth consecutive female board chair for the American Advertising Federation. So we're big believers in female empowerment at the highest level within our organization. And I love working alongside people like that who really want to get things done that advance the industry.
All right. If you're a brand and you're listening and you have a Super Bowl budget and you need a couple of consultants to jump on board, Steve and I are available. You get a whopping 12 combined Super Bowl commercials from the two of us that we've worked on. You know, of course, all 12 are from Steve, but maybe he'll let me in on this as well. Steve Pacheco, man, thanks so much for joining.
Have always a pleasure, man. Ryan. Be well.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Courageous Podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so more people can find us. See you again next week.